Okay, make sure you're in fellowship as we continue on here in chapter 45, or in the first four verses. Joseph here finally reveals identity to his brothers. And it comes about through his seeing and perceiving of the big change that's occurred among his brothers since he was last associated with them. And with the expression of divine love applied at a very high level in Judah, or through Judah, in terms of his father and his brother. All this envelops Joseph in his thinking, and it is sufficient for him to overrule then his STA as he has been pursuing revenge, being vindictive in regards to his brothers for what they've done, and finally gets a grip. And when all this hits him, he basically loses control in regards to his emotions. Verse 1, then Joseph could not control himself before all those who stood by him. So, in spite of how he may have regained composure previously, back in chapter 43, in this case, he knows there's nothing that's going to stop it. And point 10, just pick up there, getting back into our notes, recognizing the inevitable, he immediately orders, have everyone go out from me. He clears the room. Leaven with the rush of emotions upon him, knowing that he could no longer keep up the charade, he clears the room, leaving only himself with his brothers. 12, the author then records, this is his words, that it was in this sequestered setting that there was no man with him when Joseph made himself known to his brothers. They were all alone in the privacy of one another. So 13, Joseph determines that the revelation of his identity is a private affair. Nobody else's real business. And really no one would otherwise appreciate all that would come from it other than those present. And again, there is no need for others to be there. So 14, the principle is some things in life should be kept confidential and limited to only those that are directly involved, truly having the doctrinal appreciation. To celebrate a doctrinal reality in one's life, only the like-minded, those who think the way we think, being in fellowship themselves, can truly appreciate what we are celebrating. What we embrace, or truly appreciate, if you will, the feelings that may come upon us in regards to a situation. People may come in and try to reflect what they consider to be a concern or care for someone, but in reality they're not really part of the program, and it's really emotions that are hollow in regards to the true encouragement that one may have and appreciate from another person who is there in the thick of it all with you. It's just those things in life, even in the secular world. People in different professions, obviously only those similar professions may have a real appreciation for many of the things that are discussed or they look at. Others outside the circles, obviously, can be at a loss at the best. So we recognize that as it exists in the world. And when it comes to doctrine, some things are best kept within the confines of those to whom it applies and who have a true appreciation. One of the things you keep in mind is that even in the witness of the life, we are to refrain from casting pearls. The Fundies don't seem to understand that particular command. They'll throw it out all day long, even in spite of those who have said, "I don't want to hear it." But anyway. So 15, where we pick up. With the premises cleared now, Joseph lets his emotions rip. Quote, "And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard it, and the household of Pharaoh heard of it. While Nathan, Colbet, Baki, while Shema, Egyptians, while Shema, Baeth, Pharaoh." Verse 2. Emotions are part of our soulish makeup. Emotions are designed to respond. They give us indication, clarity, where we may be coming from in regards to our thinking. They're completely legitimate. God created us with emotions. But how emotions are abused most often is that people let their emotions make their decisions for them. They run their lives, they govern their lives by how they, quote, feel, end quote. That is not the design method by how we are to make our decisions in life. We as proclaim positive volition and adjusted to the plan of God are to make our decisions based on the truth of Bible doctrine first and foremost. It is to take the priority in all things we come to conclusion to for making our decisions, no matter how we may feel otherwise. See, no matter how you may feel otherwise. In the Fundy world, especially the world of denominationalism, the lukewarm crowd, with them you might think it's all about emotions. It's a pump them up, hoorah crowd, get everybody feeling good, and then let them leave. And how long is that lasting? I've been there. I lived that, tried to live that life for a long time. It lasts about as long as you feel good. Something comes along, it upsets you, then what? There is no real sustenance, no substance in regards to their orientation to life. Emotions can easily get in the way, and while they are legitimate, they are to be controlled and restrained by the doctrine in our souls. So here, Joseph, in recognition of this new spiritual characterization of his brothers and the big turnaround that he's seen in them, if you will, we might even suggest reversion recovery on their part in regards to at least their father and family. He lets it go. there's just some aspects, some realizations that one may have. And generally, for positive volition, it's doctrine that stimulates that in regards to emotions. So, 16, the Hebrew language here literally says, quote, he gave to his voice by crying. That's Nathan Kol Bet Beki, in parentheses. He gave to his voice by crying, end quote. Meaning, he exercised his lungs to produce an elevated crying sound. I went from the orders that he obviously would have given loud enough for everyone to hear him immediately, to the sole purpose and capacity to cry. So 17, in other words here, his weeping in the Hebrew, the language, is not characterized by his tears, but his voice, and a better verb to translate the key would be, quote, wailed, end quote. One of the little things that is embedded in my mind probably for the rest of the days of my life is remembering when one of my grandparents, my grandfather died, and we went to the, obviously to the funeral, and we drove up. I had an aunt and uncle and some cousins with us. We all kind of went together to the house. And a block away from the house, I could hear my grandma wailing. And it is an action that we as adjusted believers are to refrain from in regards to his practice for funerals and things of that nature. It's the very thing that... if you will, so depressed Jesus in regards to the women around the loss of Lazarus, wailing and trying to crank up the emotions of Martha and Mary on that part. We went through that in John, remembering back. The general Thundi interpretation of the verse that Jesus wept is, oh, he felt so sorry for his good friend Lazarus dying. No, he did not. He is there to raise Lazarus from the dead. Now, why is he going to be sad about that? No, he was sad because of the emotionalism otherwise his good friends, positive volition, got wrapped up in regards to that whole ordeal. So here we have an expression of wailing that is done by Joseph. In this respect, I'm not here to categorize it appropriately or inappropriately, but understandably, because he has been, if you will, fighting his emotions over everything that's been happening to him for a very long time. And with all that occurs now in the moment, see, he cannot restrain himself anymore. 18, in fact, the decibel level, the volume of sound of his wailing was so loud that the Egyptians that had left the precinct and others in the residence heard him. Even with doors closed and isolated, whatever, it was very loud. 19, it was such an unprecedented action. Something that obviously was very unique and uncommon that they would expect. It was such an unprecedented action that the news of his crying reached the ears of Pharaoh himself and his household. In other words, language is not saying that Pharaoh and his residence, whatever, some blocks away or miles, whatever it was, heard him, that it was that loud, like the voice of an archangel or something like that. No, the household of Pharaoh heard of it, recognizing that this obviously shook his staff and servants pretty much to the core. And immediately the word went out. So 20, the New American Standard Translation catches the intent of Pharaoh's hearing with the supply phrase, quote, of it, heard of it, end quote. About it, be another way you could put it. So 21, Joseph's actions here picture someone that has otherwise kept his emotions under control since his sale into slavery, and now after 22 years finally lets it go. That's really the sense that I see captured here in this moment in time in his life. It's been pent up. He's obviously already broken down a time or so to a certain degree. But now, he's going to get a little relief, emotional relief. So 22, one can only imagine the reaction of his brothers witnessing such an emotional outburst. And put yourself in their shoes. Wow. Where did that come from? After Judah's speech and appeal, this is a side of Joseph, obviously, the ruler, that would this guy even have any type of emotions at all, as cold and as calculated as he has been throughout their presence and audience with him. So one can only imagine the reaction of his brothers witnessing such an emotional outburst. 23, however, whatever they may have thought as to his emotions, what Joseph said to them next in explanation totally blew them away. I am Joseph. Ani, Joseph, verse 3. So he lets go with a large wail to however long it may have lasted. And as soon as he can catch his breath and able to speak to his brothers, he reveals himself. He reveals who he is. So that's part of the flavor in regards to the study is seeing what parties, where they're coming from, and the impact it may have all around. So whatever they have thought in regards to his crying out, what he said after that, that's what really blew him away. And remember, his brothers think he's dead. I was thinking about it, and that may have been cause for them to continue to perpetuate keeping their whole ordeal secret to their father Jacob, because they too had just finally convinced themselves, if nothing else, that Joseph is dead now. He's gone. So it's no issue to bring up to our father anymore. You know, if the thought to confess to him previously entered their minds beforehand. So they think he's dead, along with his father. So 24, following the climax of Judah's appeal, now comes the climax of the entire scenario, confronting Joseph and his brothers, which now supplies the narrative of Genesis chapter 42 through 44. So verses 33 and 34, chapter 44 is the climax of the appeal. Joseph's revealing of his identity is now the climax of the entire scenario. And that now pushes us into, pushes us forward with respect to the narrative that will follow. So 25, now his question that follows, is my father still alive? Ha od av k, in quotes, question mark, has challenged interpreters as to his intent. 26, now the narrative has revealed Jacob being alive explicitly back in chapter 43, 27, 28 with the brother's first trip to Egypt. And then, most recently, in the second trip by Judah in chapter 44, 18 through 34. As he asked him about their welfare and said, is your old father well and of whom you spoke? Is he still alive? That's 43, 27, 28. And said, your servant, our father, is well. He is still alive. And they bowed down in homage. And then Judah, obviously, makes it clear in chapter 44 that his father is still alive, or else why would he be concerned that he would die if Benjamin didn't return? So the question has to be understood in the context that they have told Joseph already that their father is still alive. So 27, this is the way most commentaries will go here. Some suggest emotional confusion by Joseph in his present state. He's now emotionally totally confused. And he's just kind of talking out of his head, if you will. Is my father still alive, you know, to color him emotionally unstable at the moment. However, a more concise reason is available. And that's why I've been alluding to as we've been going through these verses. And that's 29. That is, as we earlier pointed out in Judah's appeal, that Joseph had considered the mention of their father on the first trip as possibly a ploy to appeal to his compassion. It's just a defensive ploy. And it was implicitly. As we brought that out, they are trying to appeal to this ruler's compassion. But Joseph, in hearing that, he sees it as simply a ploy. They're just saying this. Remember, he's under his STA. So 30, that Joseph knew the nature of his brothers, i.e. Simeon and Levi, and especially following their evil against him. Let's kill Joseph. We'll just make some money and sell him off in slavery. It is no stretch, point 30 continuing, to think he regarded them with a high level of distrust. Hadn't seen him for 22 years. He doesn't know what's gone on with them. He doesn't know that they've changed. All he knows is the brothers that he left. And they were an ungodly sort, to put it mildly. See. The type of brothers, while individually they may have their place of being mean, so to speak, you put them together and you don't want to jack with these guys. No telling what they'll do. And they're vicious. We saw them go around just hamstringing animals and things for no reason. Well, that's the nature of the STA. See, I mean, it's not like they're going to butcher them and put them in their freezer. No, as we saw in regards to the context, some of their actions is extremely animalistic and deplorable. No compassion whatsoever. So you got to recognize that and put that in the context of what's going on here. So again, Joseph knew the nature, point 30, of his brothers, and especially following their evil against him. It is no stretch to think he regarded them with a high level of distrust. 31. Jacob was advanced in years, 130 years old. Chapter 47, verse 9 tells us this. And no telling what further devious actions the brothers might have been involved in over the past 22 years. Hence why you can see where, even though they may have referenced their father, that he probably there was a great matter of doubt that they were telling him the truth. So 32, no telling how often he may have wondered about the well-being of his father and whether he was well and still alive. He was ignorant of that information until the brothers came along. And what, now I'm going to believe you now? Their negative volition, their hostility and antagonism in regards to positive volition and the truth of doctrine. You know, put all these things in the same pot together, and you can see where you'd be coming from. So 33, with the input of Judah's appeal, with what Judah has said now in his speech to Joseph, it now dawns on Joseph that indeed Jacob is still alive, without a doubt. And his question is rhetorical. In other words, it expects a yes answer. Is our father still alive? Yes, he is. And this, the question simply is confirming, continuing point 33, confirming his newfound awareness that they weren't lying to him. It's not just a ploy. His father indeed really is alive and well. And that reality hits him, and hence this rhetorical question. My father is still alive. And this is dawning on him. So hopefully I'm capturing for you here the moment in Joseph's time of saying this. So with the input of Judah's appeal, it now dawns on Joseph, point 33, that indeed Jacob is still alive, and his question is rhetorical. Expecting a yes answer. Confirming his newfound awareness. It doesn't require an answer, but it's rhetorical. Whereas the brothers might not have taken it that way. So 34, now Joseph's revelation left his brothers speechless. And so, quote, his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. They couldn't reconfirm what he is now confirming to himself. Lo yakah achlamed ana ef ki lahal min paneh. 35, the Hebrew bahal, translated dismayed, is a strong term for being alarmed or terrified. We see it used in Judges 20:41. This in light and context of all people, the subject, the Benjamites. How despicably evil even God's chosen people, i.e., you say believers, if you want to, can become, as seen in the fact that there was an entire sect of the Benjamin tribe that went queer. They became homosexuals. And it's the same type of scenario that you almost see with Lot and the angels, and Lot and his daughters, the angels, and the homosexual population in Sodom in the previous chapters. But anyway, they end up raping the visitor prophet's concubine that was with them to death. And that obviously, nationally, the Jews understood this could bring great condemnation on our nation because of this. And God tells them, you need to go in there and you need to wipe these jackasses out. Oh, that's just real love by God, isn't it? But anyway, to have another false reading in regards to just because certain males choose to be homosexual. Yes, choice. I said choose. It doesn't mean that they're all the Nancy boys, as they're often portrayed, the flamers. These Benjamins were unbelievable warriors. Understand, that has nothing to do with one's masculinity of strength and prowess and meanness. The sexual orientation. Alexander was a homosexual. Well, look what kind of empirical ruler he became. Military genius. So, you know, all these things that you have out there in the world that people try to lay on you to distract you from the realities. And they were mean. And God told the rest of the tribe, you need to go in there and wipe them out. And it took them a few times to actually accomplish their divine imperative. And here, the men of Israel turned, and the men of Benjamin were terrified when they finally did, for they saw that disaster was close to them. But finally, the fear of God entered into them as they saw they were going to lose this battle. Terrified. That's our term, our word. 1 Samuel 28:21. Here in the context of Saul, King Saul, going to the channeler, the medium, the spiritualist. Today she'd be living in California and have a toll-free number you can call. Or whatever. And God really pulls the wool over his eyes. That's where Samuel is raised from the dead through this medium. And it is basically a verdict of death placed upon Saul for his disobedience and spiritual malfeasance in regards to his person. And for the woman who obviously dabbled in the cultic arts, this would have been a highly unusual situation, whereas a lot of this is just hocus-pocus anyway. And verse 20, Saul immediately fell full length on the ground, was very afraid because of the words of Samuel. And Samuel said, you're dying. You're dead, man. You took me out of paradise. I was down there partying with the rest of the guys, Abraham and the rest of them, and you are in a situation where you pull me out of paradise, guess what? You're going to die. That's my news to you. That would be a great piece of news to have to convey to somebody. Also, there was no strength in him for you to eat, no food all day and all night, as he's running under fear, anxiety, and all these other things. And the woman came to Saul and saw that he was terrified and said to him, behold, your maidservant has obeyed you. And I've taken my life in my hand. You have listened to your words which you spoke to me. Terrified is our term. And elsewhere. So the word dismayed, I don't think really does it justice. that tends to lessen really the impact of the word in terms of being alarmed, afraid. 36 simply stated they were, quote, shocked, end quote, as they tried to wrap their minds around the situation. They became numb. Hence, they couldn't respond to Joseph. Their response is further colored by the fact that they have concluded that all that has happened to them was for their sin against Joseph at the beginning. 38, now they are supposedly looking at, quote, the man, as they called him. Remember him back? The man, end quote, himself. This can't be real. Now you can just imagine what's going through their minds. 39, their first thought in their minds, possibly, this is a cruel joke, has further judgment against us, against them. That somehow, maybe this person has come to know this information apart from them saying anything. 40, Joseph could see their disbelief and then seeks to reassure them of the reality, saying, please come closer to me. And they came closer. And he said, I am your brother Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt. Nagash, Na'el, Wow, Nagash, Wow, Amar, Ani, Joseph, Ak, Asher, Akar, Eth, Egypt, end quotes. 41, he instructs him to come and get a good look at his face, and then gives him the definitive proof as to his claim with the phrase, quote, whom you sold into Egypt. Obviously, if you believe something, you can walk into a situation and be blind in terms of certain realities that may otherwise exist because of the certain beliefs that you have. They believe Joseph is dead. So this ruler that they're confronting, with that belief dominating their thinking, even though there may have been some subconscious things or something going on in their mind, they disregard that this could even be Joseph whatsoever. See. Now, come up here and get a good look at me. This is what he's saying. Come up here and get a good look at me. And then he gives him the definitive proof. I'm the one you sold to the slave traders to Egypt. 42, this incident was completely avoided and mentioned by any of the brothers at any time during either trip, and information only Joseph himself would be privy to. So that is, if you will, the clincher for them. Oh man. Uh-oh. What now? So 43, trepidation by his brothers to be upset themselves and doing something unwise after the fact. So trepidation by his brothers will momentarily remain after this disclosure to be remedied, if you will, with the doctrine Joseph will provide to them. So as we get into the next set of verses, we'll see immediate exhortation made by Joseph. And this recognizes that upon this disclosure of his identity and them coming to realize that, that the potential reactions from them could be unsavory and even destructive to a certain degree. So he will come in and with doctrine settle them down. So we'll pick that up Tuesday. Father, again, thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to light these things. In Jesus' name, amen.